Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Patil.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Last Friday, an Orang Asli villager was attacked and killed by a tiger at Kampung Sao near Gua Musang in Kelantan. The Perhelitan rangers that pursued the tiger later shot dead the animal after it also charged at them. And when it comes to human-tiger conflicts, the question is it a zero-sum game? And will humans ultimately win this tragic face-off? Let's ask S. Shanmugaraj. He is the executive director of Malaysia Nature Society. Shan, good evening. Humans, I understand, are not natural prey of tigers. So I'm just wondering whether this was an extraordinary incident. What would be some of the reasons why a tiger would attack a human?
That's a nice question as well. Because even among all the NGOs are also questioning why a tiger attacking a human. Mainly it's food resources. The conflict between human and wildlife, especially tiger, this type of incidents is very seldom happen. And for a wildlife, especially like tiger, they roam, especially this one. This is a male tiger. Male tiger, they roam more than, 300 over kilometers, no, square kilometers for finding their food, their prey. So one of the thing is maybe, there is some issues happening around that area where these tigers come out and be too close to human.
Shan, we understand from news reports that Kelantan Perhelitan Director General has reported saying that the tiger could be infected with canine distemper virus, which in the report suggests that this illness might change the behavior of tigers. I mean, what do experts, conservationists in the field, zoologists, tell us about tiger behavior and the reasons for changes in their behavior?
Okay. Same like us as well. You know, when we have the surrounding of the environment change, the habitat of where this living of this tiger change, disturbance happen. So the tiger starts to, come closer to human. And sometimes it's a bit difficult for us to really say that, the tiger been, I also was reading the news and saying that, is it been infected and all. It's a current scenario. Habitat, loss of habitat is one of the main factors where tigers are now, you can see in open, especially even wildlife. A lot of wildlife, you can really see them coming closer to human.
Right. Can I ask you, Shan, whether killing the tiger, whether the move to kill the tiger was the right move? Is that standard SOP?
Okay. This is another thing, because in the early days, if you say, the 1950s, we got a lot of tigers, At that time, maybe. But now with technologies and ways that we can try to look at, we should at least tranquilize it, and because they know there's a tiger there, and we should ready for capture it and see really what's wrong with this tiger. Is this one of the thing that, it's been infected or injured, or what's the issue? Just killing it is something that, it's a straightforward thing. Like, this is a practice where if you follow the law, if a tiger been injured a human, and if it's aggressively coming towards you, by the law, there is a law that you can really shoot a tiger, but for now, do we really need? That is, you know, the population of tigers is getting lesser and lesser. So do us understand?
Yeah, sure. I want to ask you about... I want to ask you if, you know, because we understand that the village from which the victim hailed from, the fellow villagers, also pursued the tiger. You know, in managing human-wildlife conflict, isn't there almost kind of reasonable level of local hostility towards wildlife? And what should be the... way that we manage, expectations that, you know, fellow Malaysians have about their personal safety versus the kind of priorities in conservation that, you know, advocates like yourself might have?
To really say that we should, you know, all of us should really look at you know, wildlife management per se, the priority of areas nowadays, you know, we know this is shrinking. Homes of these habitats are getting smaller and smaller. So the awareness of general public, people like us, need to really understand of this wildlife behavior. So priority of wildlife department, making them as more priority on management of the area, because we know that our forests are not that big enough, and for this wildlife to roam around, is it enough food for them? And and you know, poaching is still happening in the country, and tigers also have their own favorite meals that they like to eat. So I think more wildlife management need to be carried out.
Okay, to follow up on that, I hear you when you say tigers require a large territory that is often taken up by human population, right? But how do we then think about minimizing contact between wild animals like tigers and humans when we, what is the thinking behind, enforcement agencies like Perhelitan or wildlife protection agencies like Perhelitan? Is it to move the animals or is it to move the people?
Moving animals is the last choice that we have. Moving the people is the first choice that we have. So, like this incident, you know, it's the orang asal, the people, the community that's staying nearby to the forest areas. A tiger will not come very close to a human being or where there is people is. If the habitat has been disturbed, then they will come. So, wildlife department, I think with the current rate of forests have been reduced, the Wildlife Act and the priority for the country to get wildlife department to be more stronger in protecting remaining forest reserve. And humans that staying closer to forest edge, that they need to look at maybe moving out to, you know, certain areas where there is no tigers.
You know, Sean, what can we learn from countries that also have tigers? And I believe their use of technology, non-lethal, aversive conditioning techniques, a model of a human being that's electrified just to teach tigers not to attack humans. Are these technologies available to Malaysia or even relevant to a Malaysian context?
Not really, because you see, our whole landscapes are different. Other countries' landscapes and vegetations are different than Malaysia. And There is some technologies where, you know, protecting their roaming areas, buffer zones, forest buffer zones, and making sure there is enough food for them. You know, we know that our tigers are in small numbers now, and we know our forests are in patches. So where and the wildlife department knows the areas of roaming of tigers in the country. So by looking at that, we should increase the main diet of the tigers in the wildlife. You know, maybe because they love samba deer. So I don't see that there is a release of samba deers in the wild for tigers to eat, you know. So I these see. Are some of the things. Yeah. So
that's quite interesting.
Yeah, because, you know, if we want to have rehabilitation centers or sending tigers to another place and all, it's a very cost. You know, even in the zoo, you know, tigers eat more than, 6 to 7 kilos of meat, you know.
Right. And, Sean, can I ask you, recently it was announced that there's a National Tiger Conservation Task Force, and it's headed at the highest level. The Prime Minister chairs this task force. I'm just wondering whether you are optimistic that things might change in terms of wildlife protection, in terms of government action to minimize contact between tigers and humans.
Yeah, in that conference, because there is some of the findings and sharing sessions, making priorities of areas to be more protected. For example, our national park that we have, till today, we do not know what's the number of tigers in our own national park. We know some of the areas that we have. But in this conference, there is some updates that we will be getting. And I hope that there's new policies that and improving the Wildlife Management Act and making sure that the priority of Wildlife Act is in front than the other acts that we have for protecting our forests.
All right. Thank you so much, Sean, for joining us on the show. As Shanmugaraj there from the Malaysian Nature Society, we're going to take a quick break here and consider this more on this topic in just a couple of minutes. Stay tuned. You're watching Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sharad Kutan. We're discussing how human-tiger coexistence can be better managed following the fatal tiger attack in Guamusang, Kelantan, which led to the animal later being shot dead by Perhelitan Rangers. Now, we contacted Perhelitan, but we were unable to get them on the show tonight. Nevertheless, the discussion continues. Our next guest is Dr. Mark Ryan Dharmaraj. He's the Country Director of Wildlife Conservation Society Malaysia. Mark, this tragic incident that happened last week, I'm just wondering, what did it tell you or reveal to you about the nature of human-tiger conflict in Malaysia?
Hi, thanks for having me on the segment. I just want to start off to say that, you know, it's always tricky and complicated when the loss of a human life is involved. And maybe before I proceed to respond, I would just like to express my deepest condolences to the family of the orang asli that was attacked and killed by a tiger. I mean, human-tiger conflict is nothing new in the context of tiger range countries. I mean, if you looked at, you know, maybe over the past 20 years, I think 20 years there were more numbers of people being killed by tigers. And then over the past decade or so, you don't really hear anything of that sort. And that's simply because tiger numbers have gone down as well. I mean, there's been a lot of questions on whether this is actually a correct thing to do to kill the tiger, or you know, whether you could have done something else. And I suppose, you know, I mean, the expectation is for the authorities to fully utilize all other avenues, such as sedation and capture, and only as a last resort to killing the animal. Now, this is easily said when you're sitting behind a desk and drafting a plan. The reality is, when you're in the field, plans can go wrong. It must have been quite nerve-wracking for the officers to be in a situation when an animal that has attacked a human is in the vicinity and they don't know how it's going to react. I don't know the details, but I certainly hope that there was a proper plan in place to capture or sedate, and perhaps in this case, the officers had no choice but to kill the animal.
Mark, can I ask you about the person sitting behind the desk designing policy, and whether, you know, when it comes to human-wildlife conflict, I think from the human perspective, for most humans at least, human life is sacrosanct, and therefore an animal can be sacrificed, no problem. But is it a kind of a binary situation? Are we looking at either eliminating conflict or mitigating conflict? They're very different consequences, aren't there, from designing systems, one that eliminate versus ones that mitigate?
That's totally right, Sharad. And, I don't think you can ever eliminate conflict. You can try to mitigate it and minimize conflict, but, you know, eradicating it is going to be tough as long as you have humans and wildlife, having sharing a space. The goal is obviously to include enough proper mitigation plans so that you can minimize, those incidences.
Right. And could you give us an example? I mean, I'm just wondering, how do we go about it if humans and wildlife, particularly tigers, are to coexist and to minimize extraordinary tragic incidents like what happened recently? What would need to be done?
Right. I think to answer this question, we must first understand the space in which conflict occurs. Very often this space includes plantations or human habitation that are at the fringes of the forest, which is the habitat of the tiger, right? And so mitigation plans to make this space as safe as possible for both humans and tigers is critical. For example, fencing. I mean, I'm just using one example. It's not necessarily the most extensive and most important one, but fencing can help. But such measures must not be haphazardly done, or else you'll be limiting movement of wildlife, or worse, channeling dispersing tigers to more vulnerable hotspots. And so, you know, instead of decreasing tiger conflict, you'll be actually making it worse in some parts. So it's careful planning in the way that land use is done, as well as, you know, how these mitigation measures come into place. Now, providing safe passages for tigers through establishments of corridors, at the same time reducing the likelihood of animals wandering into human space, coupled with mitigation measures such as fencing, I think would definitely help reduce incidences. So, you know, I mean, I believe you can strive to make it less lopsided, in favor of tiger conservation.
Mark, I understand in different contexts, it's not just human beings that are vulnerable, but often they're livestock, right? So livestock become both an attractive proposition for the animal, but also, financial loss for the human community. Is livestock issues at all something that happens in Malaysia? Are we looking at farming communities losing livestock as a consequence of interactions with wildlife?
Great point, Sharad. And you're right. I think it's important to define what conflict is in this respect. Conflict doesn't necessarily just mean killing of humans. It could also include, basically causing people from not even venturing to the plantations to tap rubber, for example, thereby having a loss of income. It could be their cattle or livestock being killed by humans. And so all of that has an economic aspect or loss to the human side, right? And so it's important to contextualize why and how conflicts occur, and to be able to perhaps elucidate, what are the reasons behind it. We often think that, it is tigers who are actually, venturing into plantations and killing cattle. But in, in actual fact, most of these plantation areas that have cattle breeding, there's no proper paddock system in place. I know of a case where in Jerangau Barat, some maybe 20 years ago, people were losing cattle like, you know, over 100 over cattle per year. But, you know, a simple paddock system basically reduced that conflict to just one or two cattle being killed. So I think it's important to I suppose, professionalize, you know, the way that we actually, you know, carry out the activities that are actually closer to the forest fringe, such as cattle rearing or even plantations. If you have a plantation which is heavily, you know, there's a lot of shrubs, it's basically getting wild pig, it's sort of luring a wild pig to come into the plantation. And if you've got tiger prey coming to plantations, tigers will be attracted to these areas as well. So there's quite a number of things that revolve around trying to contextualize how and what conflict is.
All right. And in this particular instance, this conflict, there was a human life involved. And I just want, earlier in the conversation, we spoke to Shanmugaraj from MNS, and he mentioned perhaps, you know, humans are not natural prey of tigers. Maybe releasing deer, which is their favorite food, might avoid that type of conflict. And I'm just wondering, what do you think from an ecological perspective that might do? Would that be the right move? I mean, could that help with reducing human-tiger conflict?
I think maybe just to sum it up, to you know, I suppose relating it back to the main cause being human encroachment. And then leading it to other aspects is very important. Other aspects such as poaching and decline of prey. I mean, let's get one thing. So while animals rarely attack humans, if a tiger attacks humans, either all injured naturally or injured by humans, or have been pushed to the edge of the natural environment. So much so that infections are more frequent than usual, which eventually leads to an attack. You know, there are scenarios where female tigers have been known to protect their young, and so they actually attack humans. But certainly human encroachment is not the only factor or sole contributing factor. A number of aspects of this, like I said, poaching of tigers and prey decline could actually increase the likelihood of conflict. I just wanted to just explain about an incident that I was part of two decades ago when I was first started working on tigers in Jeli, Kelantan. Almost every other year, someone would be killed by a tiger. In fact, the chief minister back then wanted to get the army to shoot all the tigers in the area. But, of course, due to public outcry, it did not transpire. But I later got to know from the authorities that it turned out that a few of these problem tigers that were responsible for killing humans were found to be injured or by snare or gunshot. Now, these animals survived the poaching incidents, but they started eating cattle, eventually killing rubber tappers. So there's a direct effect of poaching activities contributing to tigers being injured and then turning them into being conflict animals. In relation to prey decline, if there's not enough food, a tiger's home range expands and needs to look for food over a wider area. This might lead to more interactions with humans, especially at the edges of the forest. And if you add free-roaming cattle with no proper paddock system to the equation, then this becomes conflict hotspots. And so, you know, I mean, obviously, prey is very important. And there's clear evidence that, you know, at least the largest prey of tigers, the Sambar deer, is in decline. But, you know, it's not the sole contributing factor. There's quite a number of different aspects that you'd have to look at to really pinpoint what's actually causing conflict.
Okay, Mark, coming back to the idea of shooting all the tigers, I mean, it seems like a position, a kind of a human extremist position, as it were, right? If the problem is that tigers are attacking people, let's just get rid of them. But tell us, from an ecological point of view, what is the role exactly of tigers in a forest? And can eliminating them, what would be the impact, rather, of eliminating tigers from the ecosystem?
That's right, sure. And so the example that I gave was back in 2000. Thankfully, there's not been a repeat of that. But in terms of the ecological role that the tiger plays, I think it's quite clear that they are the apex predator, which means that they sit at the top of the food chain and they regulate the food chain. And so, for example, leopards, if they become very abundant, then it will have an impact on a certain deer species or even pigs. And so tigers basically regulate the whole food chain in that sense. Now, if you're asking a lay person who's, you know, walking on the street, what does that mean to them? Probably nothing. And the main reason is because, you know, they are not able to relate how that ecological function is going to impact their lives. But, you know, I mean, essentially, we will not know about or how devastating the impact would be for us until at least, you know, at least 100 years or so, you know, where you can actually see a proper ecological effect on the ecosystem. The balance will no longer be the same. And that's why they always use tigers as an indicator of a balanced ecosystem for wherever tigers are found. And I think that's quite important. But apart from just the ecological aspect, I think Malaysians should be very proud that, you know, we have our very own Malayan tiger, subspecies of our own. And, you know, it is basically our duty to be to say that we would like to protect this species and keep it for the next generation. I mean, our generation we might be heading towards, you know, just a few number of tigers. And I think the Prime Minister announced that we have now less than 150 tigers. It's really sad, but you know, there is a window of hope if you are able to utilize whatever that has been said in those plans, and to be able to turn this the other way around. And I really hope, you know, conflict is just one aspect of it, right? There's a lot of other threats, like, you know, minimizing forest clearance, poaching of tigers and prey, and so many other factors in play now. And I guess the biggest threat now is to be able to, you know, to make sure that we are able to reduce some of these threats. And conflict, right, to be honest, is not the highest on that scale.
Understood. Mark, thank you so much for joining us on the show. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. Dr. Mark Ryan Damaraj from Wildlife Conservation Society Malaysia, wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching. Good night.
Good night.